From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Myles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
You are listening to a Live Mint production brought to you by HD Smartcast.
Hello and welcome to another episode of the Mint Climate Change Tracker, a podcast where we talk about the challenges posed by a rapidly heating planet. I'm your host, Bibek Bhattacharya. New Delhi is menaced every year by heat waves. Annual floods bring Mumbai, Kolkata, and Chennai to a standstill. Meanwhile, a deadly combination of humidity and heat is becoming a major problem all over the country. And this year, it seems as if every possible shock of global warming is being played out in India. Let's look at two examples. Between end May and mid-June, parts of northern and western India went through a phase of intense heat waves, with the temperature in cities across states like Rajasthan, Delhi, Haryana, Uttar Pradesh, and Madhya Pradesh exceeding 45 degrees Celsius. On 26 May, Delhi recorded an 18-year high of 47.6 degrees Celsius, while Churu in Rajasthan touched 50 degrees Celsius. On the other hand, on Wednesday, August 5, Mumbai recorded 216 millimeters of rain in just 12 hours. Some parts of the city, like Malabar Hill, recorded as much as 309 millimeters of rain in that same time. According to the Colaba Weather Observatory in South Mumbai, this was the highest single-day rainfall in 22 years for the month of August. Two lakes overflowed, large parts of the city was waterlogged, a stadium was damaged, and the National Disaster Response Force and the Railway Protection Force had to rescue 290 stranded commuters from flooded local train tracks. Between Monday and Wednesday, Mumbai recorded winds of 107 kilometers per hour. Nor is it just about the cities. The Nilgiris in Tamil Nadu recorded 200 millimeters of rain in 24 hours, triggering massive landslides, flooding, and destruction of property and crops. Up and down the west coast, in the past few days, regions have recorded massive rains, ranging from 390 mm to 710 mm. In Kerala's Idukki district yesterday, a massive landslide killed at least 15 people and buried 30 settlements of mostly tea garden workers. And more rain is expected over the next 48 hours. While the lack of local preparedness and planning is always one reason behind cities and rural areas not being able to cope with such extreme weather, it's still a fact that behind these cataclysmic rains, there's global warming. In an earlier episode, I'd interviewed climate scientist Roxy Matthew Cole of the Indian Institute of Tropical Meteorology. In a statement about the recent heavy rains, he said, and I quote, "In our analysis of rainfall data over the last 70 years, we find a threefold rise in extreme rains along the west coast and central India. This is because the monsoon winds over the Arabian Sea are now exhibiting large fluctuations due to a warmer environment." End of quote. Report after scientific report has talked about the increase in extreme weather events as a result of climate change. These may be super cyclones, heat waves, or extreme rains. India is on the forefront of terrible climate change impacts, and it's no wonder that in 1 year we are seeing the various different effects of climate change playing out. The thing is, as the window of action to stop global heating narrows, it's becoming more urgent that the world stops using fossil fuels and spewing greenhouse gases into the atmosphere. Every life lost from a cyclone, a heat wave, or rains is a life lost to climate change. A largely poor and already heat-stressed country like India is basically seeing a steep rise in climate casualties. According to the Global Climate Risk Index 2020 report, India ranks at number 5 among the 10 countries most at risk from climate change. 2,000 people died due to extreme weather events in 2018, the most for any country in the world that year. Of these, 483 people had died in Kerala due to monsoon floods that year alone. Climate change-related events hit India's 2018 GDP figures hard. According to the report, India's economic losses for that year was ranked at number 2 globally. According to new data, the rise of heat-related deaths will cost India to the tune of 4% of its GDP by 2080. That's a lot to take in. However, the solution to such nightmare scenarios remains simple. Keep fossil fuels in the ground, focus on renewable energy, get to zero carbon emissions, and create safeguards for the poorest and the most vulnerable communities in India and around the world. To talk about each of these aspects, I will now turn to my guest this week, Dr. Meenal Pathak. Meenal is an environmental scientist and a member of faculty at the Ahmedabad University. She coordinates activities at the university's Global Center for Environment and Energy. She also works as a senior scientist with the UN's Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, or IPCC. Among other things, Meenal specializes in sustainability, climate-compatible urban development, mitigation policies, and decarbonization. She is also a part of IPCC's International Task Group on Gender. Hi, Meenal. Welcome to the show. It's great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Vivek, for inviting me.
Thanks, Meenal. So the one thing that I really wanted to speak to you about today is climate change and cities. Now, India is projected to urbanize on a massive scale over the next few decades. However, the impacts of climate change will also be felt to a greater degree in that same time. How would our cities be affected?
Thanks, Vivek. That's a very relevant question. I completely agree. And as you may have seen in our recent reports, climate change will increase both the frequency and the intensity of extreme events.
Right.
So I was reading an article in the New York Times today, and I resonated with this phrase a lot, like overlapping disasters. So it's not just going to be an epic catastrophe every few years, though probably that too, but a grind of overlapping disasters, major and minor.
Right.
And I'm also extremely concerned about the slow-onset climate impacts, so like the increase in nighttime temperatures and heat.
Right.
And urban heat is, I think, going to be the most pressing challenge for Indian cities.
So how do you see this playing out, this kind of the balance that we will have with more people coming to the cities and the cities and their infrastructure trying to cope with these changes?
You have hit the nail on the head. I think we are a bit underprepared in terms of infrastructure. And increase in urbanization means an increase in population, which will add to the stress on housing, transportation, and other infrastructure. And it's going to be really the vulnerable populations that will be the most impacted. So people who live in informal housing, for example, or even pavement dwellers in most cities. And these people don't have access to good healthcare. They don't have, the social nets, the other infrastructure. So I think they're going to be the hardest hit from climate change.
And the other aspect of it is that obviously I would imagine that different cities are going to face different kinds of challenges. So if you could guide me through some kinds of challenges that would be different for the different cities here.
That's right. It will depend on where the cities are and the structure and the economic activity. So, for example, coastal cities will be, climate challenges differ by where the city is located. Coastal cities are going to be impacted a lot more by storms and sea level rise, and that is going to increase the risks for coastal infrastructure, for example, or livelihoods that depend on coastal areas like fishermen, and this could be like large ports or power plants or industries located on the coast. And I can give you an example of a city in Gujarat, like Surat, for example, has a large industrial area, and it's quite vulnerable to future climate change impacts. There are cities in the mountains where extreme heat will lead to vectors, so changing biodiversity, and then increase in vector-borne diseases. So you have, for example, more vector-borne diseases in cities which have not witnessed these in the past. And there's heat, or there could be erratic events, for example, extreme rainfall and landslides. So cities have different kinds of risks, and we really need an assessment of these risks for these different kinds of cities.
Do you see any signs of India doing these kind of assessments?
Yeah, I don't want to be very pessimistic here. I think there are some great initiatives happening. I think Indian cities have done very well on some transportation initiatives. There's been very successful solar initiatives in cities. But a handful of cities have sort of started investing in electric vehicle infrastructure. So I do see some signs of hope. But again, to end on a more cautious note, is that the speed and scale we need for the 1.5 degree transition, and I keep sort of harping on this, is that we're doing little bits, but the pilots are not enough. So we can't afford to celebrate the pilots. We really need to do things at a much more massive scale.
And it's good that you mentioned the 1.5 goal, because to have any hopes of reaching that, the time frame, the time period is a very narrow one.
That's right. And we emphasize this in the IPCC's 1.5 report, which was published in 2018. The window is very small. It almost means that this is the decade of decision. So the window is narrow and it's closing very rapidly. Of course, COVID has sort of been a little dent. But largely the trends are showing that we'll just bounce back to where we were, So I think if we don't take action in these 5 to 6 years, we might just miss the bus. And I don't really want to think about that scenario.
No, of course. Now, Meenal, I want to come to a different question. And this is where I want to talk about the importance of climate justice. How important a role do you think it will play when we look at ideas about development on one hand and mitigation and adaptation to climate change on the other?
It's a very relevant question. And I just want to emphasize that a 1.5 degree pathway is not possible without looking at equity and climate justice. So we would be fooling ourselves to think that some handful of governments or a handful of powerful people in a country can just find that solution. It's not going to be possible. As I said, these massive and rapid transitions in energy supply and transportation, equity considerations could easily be sidelined, considerations of gender, of low-income groups, these cannot be ignored. But I just wanted to rephrase your question. It's no longer a question of either or. Because it was maybe a while ago, but now climate change is as pressing. It's almost like a daily need, like a roti kapra makan thing. You can't afford to ignore. So we can't afford to say development first or climate change first. We have to find solutions that can take both into account. And I think not doing enough might just actually exacerbate the existing inequalities. So I'll just give you an example. We carried out a study last year. It was a temperature survey in about 800 households in Ahmedabad. And these were informal settlements. And you know what we found? Shockingly, the temperature inside the house was 2 degrees higher than ambient temperature. They have thin roofs, poor ventilation and congested households. And so the risks to heat mortality are massive. So we will really need to take into account all of these people, these groups before... and in consideration for our policies and infrastructure, I think.
And it is important, especially for a country like India, where we are in this kind of a unique situation where the country needs to grow, but also at the same time account for climate change.
That's right. We don't have the luxury of sequencing. I wish we did, because you see, in some countries, and I don't want to name them, they tackled the water problem first, and then they looked at the air problem, and then when they solved the air problem, they had the energy problem,
right,
and then they had the climate change. So they don't have issues of providing infrastructure to people or just providing basic healthcare. But generally speaking, you know, so we don't have that luxury of sequencing. We have to, I think, take the menu of options and identify and look closely at options that can address these simultaneously, because the trade-offs are going to be very huge. You know, the economic loss because of climate events is just going to be such a big one for India's GDP that we cannot afford to ignore it.
So, finally, Meenal, I'd like to know a little more about the work that you are doing right now.
My interest lies in focusing on climate change solutions that intersect with development.
Okay.
So basically either looking at co-benefits in terms of health or air quality.
Mm-hmm.
So let me just, we are working on diverse things like electric vehicles and cities and stuff. But let me just give you one interesting project that we're working on right now.
Okay.
This is a research collaboration between four countries, UK, Sweden, Japan and India.
Right.
And each of these teams are looking at climate change solutions that align with the United Nations Sustainable Development Goals.
Mm-hmm.
So, for example, UK has taken dietary change as a case study. So, how does changing away, switching away from meat-based diets to plant-based diets address climate change and sustainable development?
Right.
Similarly, Sweden is looking at industry, Japan is looking at energy system, and we at Ahmedabad University are working on low-carbon transport. So, we have taken two case studies, Surat and Udaipur, and we are developing alternate future transport scenarios for these cities. So we are looking at, for example, how will Surat's transportation system grow? And is that an alternate future for the city that can address mobility, climate change, and gender and equity as well?
Right. And what are the kind of trends you're seeing in this regard?
I think we use scenario assessment. So we sort of develop scenario narratives for the future, right? So in the reference scenario, or what we call the business as usual, meaning that if we progress and develop the way we are doing, then we are looking at like a highly car-dependent city, which is congested and polluted. I mean, of course, some policies will be implemented, so you will have efficiency and electric vehicles. But I think the alternate scenarios need a lot more. So we are trying to look at sort of solutions that bring in like more electric vehicles, earlier penetration, better public transport systems, and then how would the alternate future for these cities look like?
Thanks, Meenal. I'm afraid that's all the time we have right now. So thank you so much for coming on the show, and it was great to have you here.
Thank you so much, Vivek. It was a pleasure, and your questions were, as expected, very well researched. I hope this will be interesting for your listeners. Thank you so much.
That was environmental scientist Dr. Meenal Pathak, talking about cities and climate change, the importance of climate justice and equity, and how clean fuel policies can change things for the better. That's it from me today. Next week is the season finale of the second season of this podcast. It's been a wonderful experience talking to some of the most important Indian voices in the climate change conversation. Join me next week as I look back on the season and talk about what I learned. Follow this podcast and my column in Mint Lounge on Twitter with the hashtag MintClimateTracker. And don't forget to subscribe to this podcast on any of your favorite platforms, including Stitcher, Apple, Spotify, Google, and JioSaavn. I am Vivek Bhattacharya, and you've been listening to the Mint Climate Change Tracker. See you all next week. And remember, the climate clock is ticking.
This was a Live Mint production, brought to you by HD Smartcast.
HD Smartcast.
I'm Annie Apple, and I'm here to invite you to come and listen to my new podcast series, Raising a Pro. It's the most intimate sports-related conversations you will hear. Each week, we explore the journeys of some of your favorite NFL players through the eyes of those that know them best. From Joe Burrow, DeAndre Hopkins, Miles Garrett, Ezekiel Elliott, Nick and Joey Bosa, just to name a few. With exclusive insights and information, we leave no stone unturned. Subscribe now to Raising a Pro on your favorite podcast app.
From muddy jungle paths to snowy trails to rolling sand dunes, the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder is ready to take you to some of the most phenomenal destinations on Earth. In a Pathfinder, it's more than just the arrival. The real excitement comes from the ride to get there. With 7 drive modes, Pathfinder's available intelligent 4-wheel drive is built for some of the most epic journeys. So chase bigger, better, more exciting adventures in the 2024 Nissan Pathfinder. Intelligent 4-wheel drive cannot prevent collisions or provide enhanced traction in all conditions. Always monitor traffic and weather conditions.